like the start gun went off and I was still in my family's car and I was like, oh, I don't know about this. And I got out of the car, I threw up next to it. And then I walked over to the start line and I started like 2 minutes late and just kind of like tried to finish it. Wasn't able to eat or drink anything without throwing up the whole time. And then ended up having to go to the hospital after. And it was pretty bad.
Hey guys, I'm Nate Jukes, father of five, actuary by day, and trail runner before the sun comes up. Welcome to the Headlamp Hour, where we explore the stories of individuals mastering the delicate dance between work, family, and the exhilarating sport of trail running. In this episode, we talk to Caleb Olson, a trail runner from Draper, Utah, who is just coming off a big second place finish at Ultra Trail Cape Town over Thanksgiving weekend. We also talk about his win at the Grindstone 100K a few months ago and how he earned a golden ticket to Western States and how he's leading up and training for that. We talk about his background being from the Pacific Northwest and Seattle area, and we talk about his wonderful wife Morgan and how supportive and awesome she is. We talk about his job, what he does for work, and how he balances work and running and everything else that he's involved in. So I'm really excited to introduce Caleb Olson to you. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, Caleb Olson, welcome to the Headlamp Hour. I'm really excited for this conversation. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited too. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for being here. All right. So the opening question that I have for you is, how do you answer this question then and how do you answer it now? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah. So I don't even remember what I wanted to be when I was like a little kid, but I know that in high school and going into college, I wanted to be a chemical engineer. I loved I love my chemistry class. I love playing with fireworks and like making little experiments in my backyard and stuff and like trying to kind of blow little things up. And I always thought that was a lot of fun and thought like maybe chemical engineering could let me keep doing that on a bigger scale. And then I got into college and started studying that and realized it was hard and less interesting than I thought it would be. So kind of moved away from that, but I guess that's what I would have answered. Now I really like what I'm doing, actually. I think when I grow up more, I want to keep doing what I'm doing, hopefully, which is running. I've got a wife and some cats, and I work a full-time job as a software developer, and I enjoy that.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah, I love that story. I think that's common to a lot of young boys is playing with fire and fireworks and stuff. I definitely did my share of that in my growing up years. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you actually. So in your Instagram bio, you have mountains and cats and stuff. And I definitely see a lot of mountains in the pictures that you post and things that you do. And I think I saw one cat, but I haven't seen a cat recently, but you still do have cats.
Yes, I have multiple cats, and maybe that's a sign that I need to post more about my cats, but I do some stories with them in it sometimes for the close followers. But don't use Instagram a ton, actually. The main times where I'm like excited enough to post something on Instagram is usually right after a race. So most of my posts are from right after a race because those are like some of the big milestones in my life.
Gotcha. Cool. Okay. Yeah. Put in the comments or something if you want to see more cats from Caleb. So there you go. Yes. All right. And you're from the Seattle area originally, right? The Pacific Northwest. Yep. And I know that you have a deep love for the mountains. You like not only just trail running, but also some mountaineering and hiking and other mountain sports. So is that kind of where that passion started was in the Pacific Northwest. Is that where you were kind of instilled with a love for the mountains, and maybe talk about like who in your life growing up maybe helped you get a love for the mountains and stuff like that. Can you talk about
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, definitely. So definitely my dad, like I used to go camping and fishing and hiking like all the time. Like all of my childhood memories really are from like campouts that we would do. I did Boy Scouts growing up, and I actually kind of hated doing Boy Scouts. Like I hated the merit badge and like structured part of it, but I loved the camping with my friends and with my dad and like fishing and just had a ton of fun doing that. And then kind of eventually got into high school and started doing a little bit of cross country. I played soccer all growing up, so, and I ran a lot at soccer. And then as I was doing more of this mountaineering and cross country, I kind of started to combine them a little bit and like run on the trails and run up mountains. And then eventually it turned into trying to do an ultra, and yeah, kind of started from there.
Awesome. So I guess at what age was your first like ultra? Did you start that in high school then, or what?
No,
How did that get started?
so in high school, I only ever did cross country for running. And then in college, I didn't really run. I didn't run for a college. I didn't run competitively, but I started doing like some casual road half marathons. I wanted to do Boston because I had seen my mom do Boston growing up, and I thought that was like the epitome of running. So I did a marathon, Boston qualified there, ran Boston, and like enjoyed it, but then kind of realized like there's a lot of people and we're in a city and I don't know if this is for me. And so it was kind of like I checked that off the bucket list and then started running more trails after that. And I did my first ultra when I was 20. One, probably 22. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you got into it relatively young. That's awesome. But yeah, that in the road running scene, definitely Boston is like the mecca of all road running, right? And you're not a true runner until you've run a marathon, right? And people ask you what your marathon time is and
Yeah.
and stuff like that for sure. But you found the trails pretty soon, it sounds like.
Yeah, I just think like while running in the like Boston Marathon or any of the marathons that I did was like cool. It wasn't really what was keeping my attention. It was fun to do, but I always was migrating back to like I don't really want to put in road workouts. I don't really want to do this. I want to go hike through the mountains. And so I would end up doing more and more of that instead.
And I think that's a good segue into another question that I had was, what is kind of the importance of, it's kind of cliche, but finding joy in what you do instead of just doing it for competition or just doing it for exercise or whatnot?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Like, that's why I got into it. That's why I still do it. I wouldn't run if I didn't love it. And like, there are some days, especially recently, where now it's getting dark and snowy, and some days I wake up and look out outside, and like the joy to go out and run isn't there. So I don't. And like, I'm a big believer in like, I don't know, don't take it too seriously. Like, have fun with it and go do what you want to do each day. Like, I don't have a coach because I don't want to feel pressure to go out and just put in work on days where it's not there for me. And I'm usually pretty self-motivated and I don't have any issues with that. So it works out pretty well most of the time. But sometimes I look outside and don't want to go. And so I don't, or I go do something else that sounds more fun on that day. And I think for me, that's really important because it seems like my body naturally wants to do what's good for me. And so if I listen to it, things usually work out pretty well.
Very cool. Awesome. Yeah, that's so important. Obviously, keeping the joy in it, enjoying the process and not always chasing outcomes. And not, some days you got to put in the work, but for the most part, I think it's important for anything sustainable in life, you've got to enjoy it. So
Yeah, I think
absolutely.
I'd get burned out really quickly if I felt like I was pressured to follow this specific schedule that I didn't necessarily want to do.
Yeah, for sure. I heard on another podcast, I think it was the Single Track podcast with Finn Melanson, that you, and you just briefly mentioned it, but that you lived in Argentina for a time. And I was just curious about that. Like, why did you live in Argentina? At what period of time was that in your life?
Yeah. After high school, I did a mission for my church and I went down to Argentina for 2 years to go do service and like teach people. And so I learned Spanish, met a lot of cool people down there, did a lot of service projects and stuff, and then moved back up here. Yeah, I guess that was 6 years ago now that I got back.
Okay, awesome. And if you don't mind me asking, is that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or is it a different church?
Yeah, no, it's that church. Yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, I was in, I was just across the mountains in Santiago, Chile for my, for my mission. So awesome. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did you ever get a chance to go like into the mountains there at all? I know what it's like, what my mission was like, and I, you know, very few opportunities, but how about you?
Yeah, not as much as I would have liked to. I was in northern northwestern Argentina, so kind of just below Bolivia and like as close to the Andes as you can get, really. So I was able to get up, like a lot of the places, the cities that I was in were close to mountains and like at pretty high elevations. So sometimes we were able to go on like hikes or bike rides up to different trails, but it was pretty limited. I didn't get out nearly as much as I would have liked to.
Obviously, yeah. Have you ever gone back or ever have a desire to go back?
Yeah, I went back once, but it was more to visit people down there than to do anything mountain related. It was kind of before I really got into trail running. If I went back now, I think it would look very different, and I think it would be to a different area of Argentina, but I would love to go back to like Patagonia. I've got some friends who have just been down there this past week and are sending me all these videos and stuff, and it looks awesome. But yeah, I'd also love to go do Aconcagua. It's a pretty iconic peak down there.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly my feelings about it. If I were to go back, definitely down to the Patagonia area. So
yeah.
Cool. And now you're living in Draper, Utah. I'm pretty familiar with that area. I lived just across the freeway in South Jordan. That's where I graduated high school, is from Bingham High School. But Draper is about 20 minutes south of Salt Lake, you know, a beautiful area on the east bench, in the shadow of Lone Peak. Mm-hmm. So how long ago did you move there and what brought you there?
Yeah, I've lived there probably about three or 4 years. And it, my job was remote, so I can live wherever I want. And, I really like Utah. I've got some family out here, and this, like you mentioned, we're in the shadow of Lone Peak. I live in a neighborhood called Suncrest. It's like up on top of this hill. So we live at 6,000 feet. We get a little cooler temperatures in the summer, which is nice. And, we're kind of up out of the valley. And yeah, I think really just like the access to the mountains. I love the Pacific Northwest, but to do anything really cool, I had to drive at least an hour, basically. And here I walk out my front door and I can be up to Lone Peak in 2 hours on foot, or I don't know, a little more than that. But it's pretty hard to beat the proximity to mountains and then still be able to have an international airport right here. And yeah, it's a cool trail running community too. It's got a lot going on.
Yeah, awesome, for sure. Definitely a cool place to live, and anywhere in that the Salt Lake Valley or even Utah Valley to the south.
Yeah,
good place. And I think even a little further south, where I live in South Jordan or in Cedar City, is awesome too. But
yeah, we ended up going down to St. George pretty frequently, and always pass through Cedar City on the way, and stop at Centro Pizza every time.
Cedar City's yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, shout out to Centro Pizza. It's a good place.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. And just want to talk a little bit about your wife as well. So how long ago did you meet Morgan, and how did you meet? What's the story?
Yeah, we met in 2017. I had been living in Seattle and I was trying to figure out where to go next, and Utah was on my radar, and she was living down here. And when I decided to move to Utah, my mom had actually met her mom at the gym and they had become friends. And so I moved down here and my mom was like, "Oh, my friend has a daughter down there." And I didn't really know many people out here. Like I said, I had some family, but I didn't really have many friends out here. So I was like, "Yeah, can I get her number? Like, hook me up with this friend's daughter that you're talking about. Let's get that happening." And so she gave me her number and I texted her. And then later that same day, she picked me up and we went and got tacos and just kept hanging out like almost every day after that, and got married in like at the end of 2018. And yeah, that's how we met.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I've been married about 5 years then.
Yep.
Awesome. Cool. And so just a classic kind of blind date story and tacos.
Tacos and the mom setup. Yep.
The mom setup, yes. Shout out to the moms. All
Yeah.
right. Cool. And you did mention it already. You're a software developer. So what kind of, I guess, training did you do for that? Where did you go to school and all that?
Yeah, I started. So, like I mentioned at first, I thought I wanted to be a chemical engineer. I went to the University of Washington for a bit and was studying chemical engineering there. It was really hard. I wasn't really liking it. I wanted to change. And so I knew BYU had a really good business school. I ended up transferring down to BYU, going to business school there and studying information systems. And information systems is sort of like the businessy version of computer science. It's like computer science without all of the math, sort of more applied. And I really enjoyed that. And I got a internship doing software development on, I don't know how into the weeds you want to go, but I became a Salesforce consultant and I was doing software development for a consulting firm that was all specific to Salesforce. And then have kind of trans, well, I'm still doing some of that. And I'm also doing like some AI consulting and development now. And that's been really fun.
Awesome. That sounds cool.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. And you work from home. So what does your typical day like as far as, running? Do you run in the morning before work? Do you then hop on work? Do you run during your lunch break? What's a typical day look like?
Yeah, when I'm in real training mode and it's like in the summer, I usually run in the mornings before work. I feel like my stomach is usually better in the mornings, and it's when I have the kind of biggest block of time to pull that off. So yeah, I'll usually go pretty early in the morning. Right now, this time of year, it's harder to get out early in the morning because of how cold and dark it is. And I'm having a harder time being motivated when there's no big races on the immediate horizon. So it's more often lunch runs or evening runs, but also plenty of morning runs in there too. And then I'll usually come back, make breakfast, do my first couple meetings. Usually I do my first few meetings with a hat on so that nobody can see my sweaty hair. And then I'll get a break, usually at like 11, go hop in the shower, come back, do some more meetings, get some lunch. And I usually work a pretty typical 9 to 5-ish day. So yeah, by 5 I'm done and I make dinner and with Morgan, and then we go hang out with friends or we go to the gym or whatever we're doing that evening.
Dude, you just like perfectly described my at least my morning. We kind of diverged after the workday, but my morning, yeah, I get the run in. I like am still like in my running clothes for that first couple meetings, get a little break, go shower, and come back to work.
Yeah,
That's
I don't have
funny.
5 kids, so the evening probably does look significantly different.
Yeah, for sure. But that's really funny. Really interesting to hear your perspective on that. So Let's talk about balance for a little bit. And I've heard a lot of people talk about how balance is kind of illusion, that your life can never really be in perfect balance between work and play and family and other hobbies and pursuits like running or exercise. So how do you think about that word balance in your life, and is it attainable or is it even desirable?
I mean, I think like anything that you are prioritizing is in the balance. Like, I guess everything's always in balance. It's just like, where do you weight things? Like, everything's in play at the same time, and you kind of put your attention towards certain aspects of life at a time. I don't think you can do well at everything all at the same time, but I think you can do good enough at a lot of things at the same time. So like in the summer when I'm excited about racing and I'm training hard, I definitely have to cut myself a little bit of slack on work. Like I take a hit on work and I try to do enough to get by without getting called out or anything and still do a good job, but I know that I'm not always doing my best because I'm prioritizing other things. And I think there's just like a season for everything, and you can't always give your all on everything. And right now in the winter, I'm more putting more time into work, putting less time into running, putting more time into hanging out with the family around the holidays. And like I think that's healthy and good, and I like having different seasons for different focuses. But yeah, I do think it would be really hard to have the pressure on yourself to always be doing your full potential and everything at the same time.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I love your perspective on that. There's a time and season for everything, and it's not like I'm going to be 25% work, 25% running, 25% family, 25% other. There's definitely different weightings, or percentages throughout different seasons of your life. Just to paint like another brush stroke over this idea of balance. As far as like your physical and emotional reserves, if you will, that you have in your tank, do you feel like your full-time job like competes with or complements your running and training? Or are there times where it might compete with it and at other times it might more complement it and fit more like a puzzle piece?
Yeah, I think there's probably some of both. I think when work is really, really busy and I feel stressed out about it, I notice that the running definitely slips a bit. Like, even if it's, I mean, I sit at a desk all day, I don't move much. So it's not like physically draining, but because it is mentally draining and just like a stressor in your mind, I don't think your body necessarily knows the difference between like, the stress from your body doesn't know exactly where the stress is coming from. It just knows that there's stress. So I do feel like after if I have meetings that start at 7 a.m. and they go until 6 p.m. and then I'm trying to get myself to run, but I've just been working all day and I ate lunch at a weird time. So now my stomach feels weird and I don't want to go run on that stomach or whatever. Like, yeah, I think it definitely can compete. And I've had to adjust. Like, I have changed jobs in the past year and I've done some things differently to be able to give myself a bit more time and less stress. And I think that being able to recognize when you're under that stress and then take enough time out of the day for the things that like running is what I really love the most. Like that is my favorite part of most days is like getting in my run. So if I Even if I have a lot going on during work, if I can get in a run, then it's usually still a good day. And I try to prioritize that above anything else. So I don't know, a long way to answer your question, but I guess I think it mostly probably competes with running, but can complement it in that it feels really good to get out on a run when you if just been cooped up inside working, or when you know that you're about to be cooped up inside working all day.
Absolutely. I think running for me, you kind of worded that perfectly. Sometimes it's it adds stress and work as well. It can add stress and it can also take away stress. And I think mostly running takes away stress for me and maybe adds a little stress, obviously physically and somewhat emotionally and mentally. And then work, like similarly, like takes almost zero physical stress. As you know, somebody with a desk job as well, and but then adds a lot of mental stress, obviously.
It also changes my schedule for running. Like I've noticed, like I said, I don't have a coach, so I'm just structuring this myself, but getting in what feels like good runs every weekday, I still hit most weekends at like, I don't know, 50 miles on the week or whatever. And so I end up getting basically Monday through Friday, I do about half my volume. And then Thursday through or Friday through Sunday, I do the other half. Like it's all packed into the weekend because I don't have the time. So I end up kind of burning myself out, or not burning myself out, but going pretty big on the weekends, because then I know like during the week, I'm just going to be sitting around.
That's so interesting. I've heard of some other people with, I guess, similar lifestyles to you and me, like a full-time job and, you know, less time during the week, maybe family and stuff. And yeah, I did the same thing in a build up to one of my races this fall. Like pretty much I was sitting at like 20, 25 miles maybe by Friday. And then Saturday I did 20 to 25 miles in that day.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically doubling the mileage on the weekend. And I think it can be really beneficial and fine. And obviously it has worked for you as well. So
yeah,
really interesting. Well, that I think that brings us to, I wanted to go through kind of your year in review as far as racing goes. So we'll transition more to your life as a trail runner. So just peeking on your ultra sign up, you had the Red Mountain 55K down in St. George. You got first place at that. You had the Lake Sonoma 50 miler, a big second place finish, podium finish there. The Tushers 70K in the summer, third place there in Beaver, Utah. And then you had Grindstone in the fall, or late, kind of later in the season, late September. Anything in particular, though, that you'd like to say about those first three races or any other races that I missed? And were they intentionally selected to prepare you for Grindstone later in the season? Or what were kind of your motivations for picking those races?
So I had no plans this year besides trying to qualify for the world's team in Austria. And Lake Sonoma was the qualifier for that. I decided like three, you'll notice this is kind of a pattern, but I decided a few days before Red Mountain 55K, we were just trying to, I was with some friends. We were talking about what we wanted to do for our run that weekend. And the trails were dry down in St. George. So we drove down and did that 55K. So that one did not have a lot of planning behind it, and is really was meant as a tune-up kind of for Lake Sonoma and just to get in a good long run. And Lake Sonoma was a big focus race where, like you said, I got second. I qualified for the world's team. The world's race was in Austria in June, and that kind of went terribly. It was really fun, and I'm super glad I went, and it was an awesome experience, but the race itself was really, really hard and bad. And that kind of changed, like, I don't know, after that I was like, I could just not even race again this year. Like I'd be happy just kind of playing in the mountains the rest of the year. But I decided to hop in Grindstone because I was running for the Aravaipa racing team, and that's an Aravaipa race. It's a really cool race. Sorry, did I say Grindstone? I meant Tushers.
Yeah. You said Grindstone, but yeah, I think I knew you were saying, because I knew Tushers was an Aravaipa race.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Tushers 70K I did in July, I think. That's an Aravaipa race. Really cool. Because I was on their team, I wanted to do one of the Aravaipa races this year. And so that's the one that I picked. And it was fun, but like I didn't have an awesome day. And I still like didn't really feel like I had nailed a race since Lake Sonoma. So then I was just kind of like, I was thinking like, I'm kind of fit, but I also don't really have any races that I'm super excited about. What should I do? And then UTMB happened, And we were all watching the UTMB live stream, like watching people we know from Utah kill it out there and do really good. And we all got excited about it. We're like, oh, we got to get back out there next year. How can we qualify? And this was like probably 6 weeks before Grindstone. And so I kind of decided at that point, like, all right, I want to do Grindstone. I want to try and get the CCC qualifier. And so I went out and did that. So it definitely wasn't like all leading up to Grindstone. Grindstone was more of like a decision because I was feeling pretty good and I was feeling motivated to try and get a qualifier to go back out to Chamonix.
Awesome. That's right. Yeah. I wanted to briefly touch on Grindstone, but you do a deeper dive with Finn on his single track podcast shortly after you ran that. So we'll save the full race recap for that. But so yeah, the intention was then to get a qualifier for CCC mainly. And then you also ended up the cherry on top, a golden ticket to Western States.
Yeah.
So are you still planning on taking that golden ticket?
Yeah, definitely still planning on it. Western States is my main focus for next year. Everything else after that is kind of just like contingent on how I feel post Western States, because I've never done 100. I don't really know what kind of toll it's going to take. But yeah, I am definitely still planning on doing it.
Sweet. Yeah. I'm pumped to see you in 100-mile race. So it will be your first. Are you thinking about more runnable training? 'Cause you know, sometimes we pigeonhole ourselves into I'm a mountain type runner, I'm a more runnable type runner. Does that affect how you train, especially like, or also maybe during this off season, like, where you might be spending more time skiing or snowshoeing or something like that? So how has that affected your training if you're focusing on Western States?
Yeah, I think it'll affect it more as the race gets closer. We're far enough out right now that I don't think being super specific matters much. So right now, what's easiest or what's easiest and most fun is probably skiing and doing runs around my house, which is flat enough, like runnable enough, but also often in snow. And sometimes that snow hasn't been packed out. So sometimes it's just like kind of slogging through, you know, knee deep snow, which isn't really like great Western training, but it's time on feet and it's nice to be getting outside and it's what I've got near me. So I'm going to be doing mostly that through the winter. And then in the spring, I want to hop in some maybe local 50Ks, try and do some like tune-up races, get some more runnable miles, maybe go down to St. George or Moab and try and get some good desert runs in, see if I can find any heat. And yeah, I'll start to get more specific for Western States, probably starting mid-spring.
There you go. Yeah, I think that's smart. And yeah, like you said, as the race gets closer, that'll be more important for you to get in that more like runnable type training and heat training and stuff like that. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw on Ultra sign up that you're registered for the Arches Ultra 50K in January. So was that kind of with the intention of just getting something in and kind of a tune up for Western then?
Yeah, I think I'll just like basically try and train through it, use it as like a supported long run and be able to hopefully get some snow-free desert trails that I can move a little faster on. But yeah, it's a pretty low pressure race. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I imagine I'll do a few of those through the winter.
And have you done that one before in particular, the Arches?
That was actually my first ever ultra. So that was the one that I started with in 2017. And I had kind of a brutal experience that like I didn't realize it, but I had mono and I felt terrible going into the race, but like my family had come out for it from Seattle. And at the time I was dating Morgan, we weren't married yet, and her family had come out to like watch me do my first ultra. So there was all this pressure, and I was like, okay, I gotta do it. But I felt terrible. I had a fever the whole week leading up to it. And I remember like on like the start gun went off and I was still in my family's car. And I was like, oh, I don't know about this. And I got out of the car. I threw up next to it. And then I walked over to the start line and I started like 2 minutes late and just kind of like tried to finish it, wasn't able to eat or drink anything without throwing up the whole time, and then ended up having to go to the hospital after, and it was pretty bad. So I needed some redemption at that race.
That's a good way to impress the in-laws for sure.
Yeah, they definitely saw that I would stick it out. I got it done.
That's so funny. That's a great first ultra story. I love
Yeah.
it.
It was tough.
Awesome. So yeah, looking for some redemption in January.
Yep.
Good. So I also heard, after Grindstone, it sounded like you were kind of done for the year, like you were going to lay low, but you decided to jump in first the Javelina 31K there and then Ultra Trail Cape Town. So I guess I'm just wondering why, like what was the impetus behind doing those two races after you felt like you were kind of done for the year after Grindstone?
Yeah, I was definitely happy to be done after Grindstone. I think in my post on Instagram about it, I said like ending the year with a bang or something. And Finn asked me on that podcast if I was done, and I was like, yeah, I'm done. But then I was down at Javelina to pace Brett Hornig for the Javelina 100, and he ended up hurting his knee and had to drop after lap three. And I still wanted to get in a run for the day, so I just hopped in the 31K. They're pretty flexible with me grabbing a bib because I'm on their team. So I just grabbed a bib and decided to do that evening as my run. And
That's
then,
awesome.
it was good way to get in a little workout.
And you won it, right? Did you get first?
I did, yeah. It's not a super competitive race, but yeah.
Well, we won't say that part. You
Okay, yeah,
won.
it's a very competitive race.
You
Yeah.
won. That's awesome. That's so cool. Great. So let's now talk about Ultra Trail Cape Town. So this was over Thanksgiving weekend in the United States here. So while the rest of us were, back home stuffing our faces with turkey and watching football and stuff like that, you decided to go run Ultra Trail Cape Town. Now I know there was a big Salt Lake City contingent that went. So was that kind of the impetus behind that was to go with a bunch of friends and just go have fun and do that race?
That was the main reason. So I had actually emailed Stuart, is the race director of Cape Town. And I remember after Lake Sonoma went well, and that was one of my first high profile races that went really well. And I was talking to Finn after that, and he was like, dude, I've got this whole list of like people that you should email to start conversations with now that you're like on people's radar. And he gave me, among all the people that he gave me, one of them was Stuart. And he's like, email him. He puts on a super cool race. I know he's supportive in like helping elite athletes get out and be able to do it. So I sent him an email in April, and he said something about like, yeah, you should come out. I'll bet we can get you a free entry or something like that. And I was like, okay, cool. But like, I don't know. I kind of never really followed up on it just because it was a long way out and it's a big trip out to do that. And I didn't know what my plans were going to be in Thanksgiving. And then I kind of forgot about it. And then everybody, so after Grindstone, I actually went out to Kona to the Ironman World Championship, and my mom was racing out there, so I went out to like watch her do that. And while I was out there and like surrounded by all that race hype, the race director Stuart emailed me back again saying like, hey, have you had a chance to think about this? Are you in? And that was also the same time when all of my Salt Lake friends were blowing up the group chat saying like, let's all go to Cape Town, this is going to be awesome. And then my mom was running this epic Ironman World Championship race, and so I got excited about that, and it made me want to race again. And so yeah, then I basically kept talking to Stuart. He said that he could help me out a little bit to get out there, and yeah, made it happen. It sounded like a really fun trip, and I didn't have any other Thanksgiving plans, so it was
Dude,
meant to
that's
be.
so cool. That's
Yeah.
awesome. And I can't just blow by the story of your mom competing in the Kona Ironman World Champion. Like, has she? So she has a history of doing Ironmans and stuff, then is that like, yeah.
Yeah, she's done a lot of Ironmans and half Ironmans and marathons. And like growing up, like I mentioned, she did the Boston Marathon a few times when I was growing up, and I saw that, and like it made me want to do the Boston Marathon. And then she's, I'd say a little more recently, but I'll bet for like the past 7 or 8 years, been doing these Ironmans and like trying to qualify for the world championships for her age group, and finally made it after a race. It last spring or this spring. And so she was like super excited about that. That's what she's been working towards for many years now. So yeah, it was pretty exciting to go watch.
That's really cool. That's awesome. I love that, you know, when it's a family matter, that you can support each other in different events and things like that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And then yeah, so you're at that race in that environment. You get the email from the race director, Stewart. You get peer pressure, positive peer pressure from your Salt Lake City friends, and so you sign up for the race.
Basically, yep.
Cool. And you don't just sign up and go and run, you get second place. So a good solid performance, podium finish. And Anthony Costalis was third. So
Yeah.
two and three from Salt Lake Americans. So that's awesome. And I wanted to just read back to you one of your Instagram posts after your race. You said, "I think I loved this course so much because it gave me a chance to use both the running fitness that I've been working hard on the past few months specifically, as well as the mountain technical adventure skills that I've picked up over many years of playing in cool places. It truly is a unique race, and I fully intend to come back for more." So, can you walk us through the race and expand on how you felt like it played to your strengths as more of a mountainy and technical course? And just walk us through how the race played out.
Yeah. So it started off, it's this really cool combination of like you're starting off at sea level near the actual city of Cape Town, or in the actual city of Cape Town, kind of by like the beach and the coast. And then it's just like one set of after another of you go up something steep and technical, across a steep and technical plateau or mountain, and then down something steep and technical, and then across like a beach that's like runnable and fast, and like maybe there's a road mile in there. And so like it was a fun combination of all these different kinds of trails, but most of the time it was pretty technical, like much more than any other ultra I've ever seen. I don't know. I thought of technical trails as like maybe some roots and rocks, and I thought like Austria maybe was pretty technical because that was pretty rooty and steep. But then going out to Cape Town, like that's the first race that I, or the first ultra that I've done where I've ever had to actually like be grabbing rocks and pulling myself up and like grabbing ladders or like iron rungs in the sides of cliffs and like lowering myself down on that or like a rope. Like it was just way more intense in a technical mountainy kind of way than any other race that I've done. And
Wow. So
yeah.
some definite like scrambling type things then.
Yeah, not like sustained hard scrambling, like nothing that most people couldn't do without a problem. But I've done so much of that kind of stuff that, and I love it, and I feel really comfortable on it, that I was able to just move quick on it. Well, a lot of people kind of like they were fine, but they weren't going fast on it. They were definitely more limited by the terrain than by their like physical skills or physical fitness. So I was able to move fast enough that I was actually like not, yeah, like it was more of a fitness thing and like, can my quads take this pounding than like a where should my next footstep be? So I think that let me just like I started off the race pretty conservatively because the first 7, 8 miles are pretty runnable and fast, which is not my strongest point. And so I was like back in 10th or 11th place. And then as soon as it got really technical and steep and yeah, it just got a lot harder. I started moving up without even really trying or feeling like I was working harder, but just because everybody else was moving a little slower on that kind of terrain. And I really noticed it at like mile 25, you descend down to this town called Wodundo. And it was like probably a 2,500 foot drop in like 2 miles, and you're just going down kind of the side of this cliff, and it's pretty steep. And I just passed like a ton of people that I wasn't really expecting to ever even see again because I thought they had just taken off. But that's when I kind of realized, like, I made it up to Tebow, who was in third place, or no, he was in second place at the time. So I was running right with him, and I came into the aid station just before him. And that was early enough on the race that I was like, whoa, I'm like actually really in this. And if I hold this, then I'm gonna end up on the podium. And that was, I don't know, that was kind of what I thought going into the race would be my best case scenario, would be like managed to squeak my way onto the podium. So I was really excited about that.
Yeah, and you exceeded that.
Yeah.
That's really cool when you can feel really comfortable and confident and just pass people, you know. Were there spots where you're like, I guess, you know, you weren't behind like masses of people. You said you were in about 10th place kind of going into the start of the technical things, but were there places where you were like had to kind of squeeze your way around people on obstacles or anything like that, or?
I don't really force a pass. Like I kind of just chill with people and like try and have a little conversation with them. And I don't know. I've met a lot of cool friends and people through trail races, and it's usually because I don't immediately go for the pass. I like sit on people for a couple minutes and chat with them, and then when I see a good spot, I'll pop around. But like ultras are so long, there's really no rush to try and make something happen unless it's easy and convenient.
Nice. The friendly and then the friendly, you know, chit chat with them and then the pass when
Yeah,
the good
the you
moment.
mind if I pop around you up here? And then they're like, yeah,
I
go for it. Yeah.
don't know which way is meaner, just passing them when you first get to them or trying to be friendly and then burying them later.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. No, that's fun. That's really the cool thing about this sport is you can meet somebody new during a race and become like instant friends with them. So very cool.
it was really funny. One moment that stuck out that's a good example of that was right after Wodundo at like mile 26. I was running with Tebow, and we hit this section of the beach that was just like this huge boulder field, like all these 10-foot high boulders all over the beach that you have to go through. And the flag is just like stuck between the cracks between boulders, like sticking out sideways. And so you're kind of just like picking your way through this big field. And there was this boulder that I tried to take a big step up to because it was like, I don't know, it was like chest high that I had to get my foot up to pull myself up. And I like went for it, and then my hip flexor cramped up, and I like kind of froze and like had to step back down. And Tebow just like grabbed my butt and like pushed me up. And I didn't think anything of it for a minute, but then I kept running, and I was like, wow, what other sport would like a competitor just like grab you and push you up and help you when you start like cramping up on a boulder? It's pretty cool.
That is awesome. What a great story that just, yeah, encapsulates the spirit of trail running. I
Yeah.
love it. Cool. In another Instagram post after Ultra Trail Cape Town, you said, "Too many thoughts and feelings to put here now, but I'm feeling very grateful. This past week in Cape Town deserves some better words about it than just this, but I'll keep it simple for now. Morgan is a treasure, and the first thing I look for whenever we do an epic adventure like this is a hug from her at the end. Thank you, Morgan. My life is so much better because of you." So I wanted you to talk about the importance of that, the importance of Morgan, your wife, in your life, and perhaps especially in your running and races and what she's meant to you.
Yeah. So I mean, like the example that people see and that's easiest to get a picture of is like the hug at the finish line, or like throwing ice down the backpack at an aid station. And that was awesome, and it was super helpful to have her crewing. There was also shout out to there's a lady named Lee who lives in Cape Town and was like our local guide who helped drive us around and navigate the driving on the other side of the road situation over there.
Oh,
So
yeah.
that was really nice. But yeah, I mean, that's like a tiny part of it. That's that's 11 hours or however long the race is. But there's also like the months or years of like being okay with me going out every weekend for back to back 8 hour or 6 hour days or whatever it is that weekend, or being okay with picking up some extra work around the house because I'm off skiing or doing something fun with friends, which like kind of sucks and makes me feel bad sometimes because like I don't know, I love running and like no one loves cleaning the house or doing chores or like any of this other stuff. And I don't know, it is very cool of her to support me in that way. And I try to find ways to support her back in things that she loves. And she's also an ultra runner and she did her first 100 miler this year. And so I tried to find ways to support her in that. But yeah, I mean, it would be very hard to do it all without somebody there supporting you and picking up the slack in the areas where you can't keep up because too much of your attention is focused on other things.
Absolutely. Well said. Love that tribute to Morgan. And yeah, I was gonna say she's a good trail runner in her own right and in her own respect. So how do you two balance, the time between your own training? Do you ever train together? And how do you balance that with, if your training goals are different? If you need to get a certain workout in, or she needs to get a certain workout in, how do you guys manage that?
We train together sometimes. We really like coordinating on like time and location for runs, and then like we'll both drive up to Park City, for example, and we'll meet our friends up there, and I'll go off with my friends and she'll go off with her friends, and we'll both do a 2 hour run but at our own pace on our own routes, and then we'll meet back up after and grab some food or something like that, like make it a social event. And that's really fun. That's probably what the majority of what we do is, but we definitely also run together. She'll sometimes ask me for like running advice. She doesn't have a coach either. And so I'll sometimes like say, if I were you, I would maybe do this run today. And then I'll give her like a little workout or something. And if it lines up, I'll go run her workout with her and keep her company. We have found that it's not always the best for us to run a lot together. Sometimes that ends in frustration, or like she feels pressure to go faster and doesn't want to, or I don't know. It sometimes doesn't work out, but I think we've found a good balance and a good way to do it. And then we'll also set up times to like do designated things together. Like we're saying this is a hike up front. This is gonna just be a hike. We're gonna take a chill. Let's go do this cool thing together. And so that's also really nice.
Awesome. Love it. Yeah, that sounds like really, really good and a really, I guess, healthy approach to it. I love that. Like we both agree this is a hike. We're not gonna like run or compete or anything. That's great. Cool. Now you had more than, like I said, more than your wife there with you in Cape Town. There was Anthony Costales and Leah Yingling and Mike McGonagall. I can't ever
McMonagle.
say it. McMonagall. There we go. Can't say his last name. And I saw on Anthony's Instagram this just image of him finishing. He's coming through the finish chute. He's pointing at you. He rips off his vest and he gives you the biggest hug ever. So just talk about that moment and what it meant to you, and maybe how that's kind of emblematic of your friendship and your relationship with him.
I mean, Anthony's kind of like a Salt Lake legend. Like he won't always say it. He's kind of a quieter guy, but like I remember when I first started kind of running with the Salt Lake group, I would hear about Anthony Costales, the 212 marathoner or whatever he is. Like he was a legend, and I would bump into him every once in a while on runs up in Park City, and afterwards I'd like tell Morgan like I saw Anthony today. Like it was like super cool, like running into a local celebrity. And so it's gone from that to like over the past year or two, we've been running together more frequently. We have a few mutual friends who have made that easier to make happen, and now we'll do like adventure runs together. We did a really cool one from my house to our mutual friend Jimmy Elam's house. He just moved across the Wasatch, and so it was like a cool link up adventure. And being able to do those together, I think, has like made us brought us closer together and made us more excited about each other's success. And we're actually we're planning on racing a lot of the same races next year. So obviously we're both in the same Cape Town race. He's going to do Western States again. We're both currently planning on probably doing CCC, a little bit up in the air still, but yeah, we're potentially going to be racing each other pretty frequently. And to be able to have somebody who like you're competitive with and you're racing against, but also you want the best for them and like you hope that they have a great day. It was a cool feeling to know, like at every aid station I would ask, like, how's Anthony doing? Is Anthony still in third? Like, not because I was worried about him coming to catch me or something. I think I would have been just as happy if he was in front of me, but it was more just like, is he still in this? Is he doing all right? Like, it would be so fun to be on the podium with him. And yeah, I think we were just really excited about both of us doing well in that race.
Yeah. Talk about how that exactly fuels you. I want to go deeper on that. When you're in the aid station and when you're asking, where's Anthony? And they say, he's right behind you in third place. Obviously, yeah. Like you said, it's not when it's a friend, it's like, you get pumped. Like, so how does that fuel you and help you out?
For me, the motivation was I thought it'd be so cool to stand on a podium with him and to have like second and third, like multiple people from our group in the top and on the podium, I guess, in the top three.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, I was just trying to gauge, like, are we going to be able to fend off fourth, basically? Like, it kind of felt like we were in it together. And even though there was a however many minute difference between us, like, because I knew that he was right there, I was like, all right, I got to keep going, because if we both stick in this, like, anything could happen to either of us at any time. So we got to both keep moving along so that we can keep this up through the end and stand on the podium together.
That's so cool. I love that. I love the almost the team aspect, you know. Obviously, like, there's no practical things at stake,
yeah.
Whether, you know, Anthony finishes right behind you or he finishes last. But it just feels like so much like a team effort. That's really cool. So, but you are, I actually wanted to transition to, you are on a team, the Aravaipa running team. So you've mentioned a couple times already in the podcast, but how did you get connected with them and what's it like to be on that team?
I got connected. So I did an Aravaipa race. I guess it was actually also at Tusher's. It was the Tusher's Marathon. I did that in 2021, I think. And I really enjoyed it. Tusher's is awesome and they put on a good race. It was the first race that I had done since COVID, when everything was like pretty questionable about if races would even happen. So I was really excited that they were able to put one together and it felt safe. And it was just fun to see everybody come together again. And so that was my first like exposure to Aravaipa. And then they posted something on Instagram, I think, that was just like a Google form saying like, do you want to be part of the Aravaipa running team? And I didn't really know exactly what that meant, but I was like, maybe I could meet some cool Aravaipa people. I didn't know where it would go, but I was just filling out the form and I got an email back saying that they wanted to talk to me. And so, yeah, it's been cool. It's a pretty low commitment kind of thing where like I wear their kit and I do some of their races, and in return, I get connected in with their community. I get access to some of their races and get a little bit of support, but it's been fun. They've been a good group, and I've ended up hanging out with Jamil multiple times and getting to know some of the like organizers of Aravaipa better. And they're cool group of people.
Awesome. Excellent. All right. I wanted to do, as we kind of finish up here, a lightning round. So a few different questions and just quick answers. All right.
Yeah.
So if trail races had walkout songs, what would yours be?
Oh man. Recently, I keep getting Cinderella Man stuck in my head. Do you know that song?
I don't. I've heard the. Is it in the movie Cinderella Man? That old
No,
boxing movie?
it's an Eminem song. And
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
I don't know. That song was going through my head a lot during some of my recent races. I'll pick that one.
There you go. Okay, well, I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah.
All right. What do you eat for breakfast on race day?
An English muffin, if I can find it in South Africa, that was hard. So I think it was just a banana and a little bit of oatmeal.
Nice. Favorite piece of race day gear, something that you can't go without.
I like my watch. I mean, it's nothing special, but I just like having a watch and like seeing my stats and doing math while I run to try and figure out when I'm going to hit the next aid station and stuff.
Perfect.
Yep.
Craziest weather conditions you've run in during a race?
I've been pretty lucky with most of my races weather. The only time I've ever had to use a jacket really during a race was CCC last year. There was, I don't know, maybe an hour long section where it was pretty foggy and cold and windy, and so I threw on jackets and a glove or a jacket and gloves. But yeah, it's pretty tame for a most wild weather story.
Nice. Your go-to mantra to push through tough moments during a race.
I don't think. Oh, I had something that popped in my head during Cape Town that was the sooner you finish, the sooner you're done.
Yeah, for
Yep.
sure. Yeah, I feel like that's one that my high school coach would drill into us. Just run fast.
Yeah.
Good. All right. So that's the end of lightning round. So
Okay.
I think I already know the answer, but what's next on the agenda? So you got Western States coming up and potentially CCC. Anything else on the horizon?
I maybe this can serve as some peer pressure for other Salt Lake friends, but I would really love to get out to Madeira this year for one of the shorter races because I don't think I can pull off the 115K before Western States, but I just want to go out there and like see it. So if I can find a group that would make that fun from a social aspect, I would love to get out there.
Well, I'm interviewing Anthony next on the podcast, so maybe I'll try to convince him to go with you to that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, give him some pressure.
Cool. All right. So the title of this podcast is The Headlamp Hour. So that's kind of a nod to, folks like you who have full-time jobs and their or other priorities in their lives, other things going on. And that make trail running a priority too, and do it for the love of the sport. So what or who is your headlamp in your life, and how has that thing or person helped you navigate the sometimes dark and technical trails in life?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a great answer to this. I like the obvious thing that pops into my head was like I could say my wife, but I don't know. I already talked about my wife and I don't know that I was actually talking to her about this. I feel like she could be like my poles or my shoes or something else that's more practical. But like headlamp, I kind of want to say the Salt Lake City like trail running community from a trail running aspect of life. Like they really have been amazing for kind of lighting the way in terms of giving me a direction of like what I want to do, what races I want to sign up for. There are so many instances where I would not have done a race or considered something or had the confidence to go for it in certain races if someone in the Salt Lake community hadn't told me like, oh, you could totally do that. You should totally go for this. And so I think I draw a lot of like energy and motivation from them. And yeah, I'll go with them as my headlamp.
Perfect. That's a great answer. And obviously, you need more than just a headlamp when you're running through the night. You need poles, you need shoes, you need jackets sometimes. And
Yeah.
so, it is a community, it's a village. And what a great answer. So, well, thank you so much, Caleb, again for your time. We'll obviously link to your Instagram and Strava in the show notes so people can follow along there. But really looking forward to seeing you progress in your trail running career. It seems like it's been a pretty steady incline over the past few years, and I don't think you've hit your ceiling yet on what you can do, and really excited to see how you do in Western States and CCC and the rest of your trail running career. So thanks for the conversation.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. We'll see you later.
Sounds good. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.